May the please court. My name is Ji Xian Li. I represent petitioner. In this case, the BIA affirmed without opinion the IJ's decision in denying petitioner's application for asylum and withholding of removal. The IJ's denial of petitioner's asylum is based upon his adverse credibility finding. The IJ supported his adverse credibility finding with two reasons. First, the IJ's adverse credibility was based upon his demeanor observation. Normally, this court gives the IJ special deference in his adverse credibility finding based upon demeanor observation. But in this case, we would urge the court not to give the IJ's adverse credibility finding based upon demeanor observation any deference, because the IJ, in this case, according to the IJ, petitioner was sometimes puzzled and confused, and his testimony was halting. However, the IJ failed to give one single specific instance of when petitioner was confused and puzzled, and where in the transcript respondent's testimony was halting. And the IJ in this case clearly did not comply with the law in this circuit, in which the court has consistently held that generalized statements do not identify any problems in demeanor are not sufficient to support an adverse credibility finding. In this case, without identifying particular instances of problems in petitioner's demeanor, petitioners has been deprived an opportunity to offer any explanation.
He did describe halting, for example. Demeanor is something not based on the substance of what somebody says, but the manner in which it's said. And so he specifically identified what it was about the manner of the testimony that gave him pause. Why shouldn't we take that as being sufficient?
Exactly. Yes, Your Honor. But in this case, although the IJ only gave a generalized statement that his testimony was halting, but the IJ did not point to any particular instances in the transcript to show that the petitioner was halting.
Well, the transcript may not show halting or long pauses, and the fact that somebody would, say, pause for a long time or stutter at one particular point probably would not be indicative of anything. If it's a pattern where somebody testifies in such a way that they seem not to be relating what they actually know but trying to remember a story they're supposed to tell, can you point to something specific in the transcript to reflect that, or is that simply a broader explanation of why it is that the IJ came away with the impression this person was not telling the truth?
Well, in this circuit, the court reveals only the actual reasons that by the agency without giving the court any examples of which portion of petitioner's testimony was troublesome, the court would be left at second guessing the IJ what reasons actually was relied by the IJ. And also, I must admit the transcript sometimes shows that the testimony was not that coherent, but that's more of an indicator of a poor translation provided at the hearing. The court has held in Perez Lostel versus INS, sometimes petitioner provided unresponsive answers. That's circumstantial evidence of a translation problem. I hope the court has some other cases, immigration cases originating from Guam. We only have one Mandarin interpreter on Guam. If the court compare those transcripts, then the court would be comfortable in finding that it is the interpreter's English rendition that is halting, not respondent's petitioner's testimony. And also the second reason that the IJ relied upon to discredit the petitioner is the country reports. I believe this issue has been fully addressed in Zeng versus Ashcroft. That's the additional citation we provided to the court this morning. And the facts in these two cases are identical. Both cases involve a young couple who are not legally married at the time when the abortion took place. Both immigration judges relied upon the country conditions to discredit petitioner's claim.
So the coming back to the demeanor issue, because, you know, on the face of it, he tells a fairly incredible story, and getting a saw, and one night only, while it rains, he saws his way out of the jail, and then flees for 9 months across China, and then he floats on this boat, etc. I mean, you know, he tells a story, so the immigration judge is trying to benchmark that against, is he telling the truth? And his final point says, during the proceedings, the respondent has been carefully observed. This has been done with particular care, inasmuch as members of the appellate board may have difficulty conjecturing solely from perusal of the written record whether he testified truthfully or whether he lied, or because of unconscious bias or faulty memory, testified with inadvertent inaccuracy. And then goes on to say it's been decided that he's not telling the truth with many of the incidents, and basically is making a credibility judgment based on his demeanor that what he's saying isn't the truth. How much more specific does the immigration judge need to get?
In previous cases, the IJ, when the IJ relied upon demeanor observation to support an adverse credibility finding, the IJ at least would describe with some degree of specifics that what was questioned by the IJ. As I said earlier, because the IJ did not give petitioner and notice one portion of the transcript was questionable, petitioner was deprived of the opportunity to offer an explanation. So I would hope that the government, the counsel for the government, would give me an example where the petitioner's testimony was halted, and then I can offer a counter explanation.
Let's stop there. I mean, just so I understand, the rule or the principle you'd like us to adopt is if the petitioner is puzzled, as the IJ said, or testifies haltingly, then the IJ should at least link that demeanor with some part of the testimony, you're saying.
That's correct.
So you'd have a kind of one-to-one correlation between the demeanor and the event.
Yes, explanation in the record, I think it can be easily readily available. One is the translation problem, as I said, but the interpreter, just like me, who is not a native English speaker, so I may speak in holding it, and that's not necessarily indicate that I'm speaking less truthfully than Mr. Goldman, who speaks far better English than I do.
You probably have a lot of trouble in China. You have about a minute and 30 seconds left. Would you like to save it for a rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your argument. Counsel?
May it please the court. Donald Kubion for respondent. Your Honors, putting credibility aside, if I may, because I know the court wants to hear from me about that. The problem in this case is a mere boyfriend, even covered by the population control amendment. And the Ma case, of course, in this circuit, said that a boyfriend who was traditionally married, which seems to be the most common way to marry in China, from all the cases we see, you see more than I do. That's true enough.
That's true.
About 5,000 a year.
Well, I've, by choice, briefed mainly such cases for the past 2 years and seen quite a few, and you've seen my briefs, but in Ma said that when you go to register the marriage, and the cases, this case doesn't any more than any other case, flesh it out and tell us what that really means. Because sometimes the couple goes before they're traditionally married, sometimes they go afterwards. It seems to be, from the best I can make of it, simply a recordation for the state of your, for official recognition by the state of your traditional marriage, which seems to be the only way I've ever seen that people marry in China. It is not a marriage ceremony. It's a registration before or after the fact. And in Ma, the couple had gone through a traditional marriage, and the court, this court said that that's good enough, that the fact that they were refused registration, albeit that they were underage, didn't matter, but it was all part of this population control policy of the Chinese government. In our case today, by marked contrast, there is no claim, there is no indication that this couple ever traditionally married or married in any other fashion. In fact, the record conclusively shows otherwise.
The government raised this issue before the board?
I don't know, Your Honor, whether it was raised or not, and I would I neglected to tell the court that in my last footnote, somehow the word not got in there, and it should have. I should have been saying that Ma is controlling, and somehow it's not controlling, and I apologize for that. I don't recall, Your Honor, whether...
Yes. Now, I'm even more confused.
Yes.
Because my impression, and perhaps it was the not problem, my impression of that last footnote in the position coming into today was that if we get to that issue because the board didn't speak to it, we should remand under Ventura, which position I understand it takes all the time. And now you seem to be addressing the merits of it to suggest that what you're really asking us to do is we don't need to deal with the adverse credibility determination. We can turn him down based on the fact that we don't have a spouse relationship here, which is exactly what I thought you were telling us not to address, that I should go back to the board under Ventura. So,
again, my apologies. If the court wants to remand the case to let the board address that issue,
I
have no problem with that.
I know what you're asking for. So
yes. I submit that Ma is determinative of the case. But beyond that, if you wish, we can get back to the credibility thing.
That was not a finding that stopped the immigration judge, was it?
No, he did not. He did not address that.
He did not address it, and the board did not address
no.
it, de facto having adopted...
Yes, it was a streamlined only.
Streamlined decision. So isn't this one of these things of you basically take the warts of the IJ's decision as you find them, and the board adopted this, and
yes.
if there's no challenge against it, why would it be appropriate for us to remand? It would be like a second bite at the apple.
Well, but for the government, you mean?
Yes.
And because it wasn't covered, it passes?
But the shoe was on the other foot. And they had an issue they thought was dispositive in their favor, and they didn't raise it before the board. You would quite appropriately argue to this court that the issue's been waived. They don't get a second bite at the apple. I guess that's the sense of Judge McKay's question.
I mean, if it's certainly something that could be fixed at the IJ level had it been brought to the attention of the board. Because they could have said, well, there's a jurisdiction issue, send it back, we don't have any findings. But we have no record of that anywhere, so it seems
well,
to me...
Well, I must in candor tell you that...
I mean, it might be a good argument.
It was either raised or suggested by the petitioner at the hearing. They did file a pre-hearing brief of sorts. They didn't raise it well enough, but they did mention it.
Well, I don't think they would be trying to find their way out of a marriage.
No, they were trying to say that Ma covered it.
Right.
Or CYZ covered it. when it obviously didn't.
Your position that the worst case scenario from the government's point of view, because this issue wasn't addressed, if we disagree on the credibility, that it ought to go back to the board to look at Ma in the first instance, and that's the sense of Ventura.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Embarrassingly, 36 footnote.
You want to talk about ACD? Adverse credibility determination?
The law is
he's supposed to say, the IJ, he or she is supposed to identify specifically what it was about demeanor and how it ties to the heart of the claim.
All right. Well,
was that done here?
Not wholly. He dealt, I guess you could say, in more conclusions by saying words like puzzled, confused, hesitant, faulty, etc. Now, on page 28 and 29 of our brief, I won't belabor it again, but I went into the record and I found numerous instances that I say support those conclusions, and I pointed them out. The most significant one, I believe, or in my estimation, would be when he refused or was unable to answer where in the world did this claim of being wanted for kidnapping and robbery ever come from? And the judge could not get him to answer that question. And that's the most demonstrable one that I could find. And like I said, many others, and they're listed there with the citations.
The question, Mr. Goodwin, is that obviously as a good lawyer, you can see some holes in the story.
Yes.
I see some holes in the story, frankly. But the question is, isn't it incumbent upon the immigration judge to say,
yes,
he's going to say, he's puzzled, that doesn't help us, but say, he's puzzled, he doesn't seem to be able to explain where the robbery incident came from, or he was totally confused about his dates.
Well,
and we don't have, like he's totally confused, period. So we have nothing to link the alleged demeanor.
I understand,
I'm
not arguing with that. If he didn't do it, he didn't do it.
So maybe you're agreeing that we should, at least on the credibility, to conclude that, through no fault of your own, the IJ here just didn't tie it up as required under the law.
I would say, for the most part, that's the case. But I
appreciate your candor.
I tried to find for the court the examples he was referring to, and I think I found them. Some are better than others.
Can you also distinguish, there are different kinds of evaluations of credibility based on observation.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them go to the substance of what's said, and that you can find, and did find,
yes,
as you're going through the transcript. And then there are other things that won't be reflected in the transcript at all. One of the problems that an appellate panel always has with demeanor evaluations is demeanor includes a lot of nonverbal things.
Certainly.
In the transcript. Now, what is the obligation of an IJ with regard to those non-substantive things, where it isn't a matter of not being able to recall dates or explain the circumstances of a robbery, the examples of Judge McEwen, but it's just that you start twitching in a certain way, or the kind of things that human beings think that you can tell by looking at somebody. What is the IJ supposed to do to make a record about the basis for this?
To make a better record, he should have done what Judge McEwen specified or articulated. He should have limped it out in some manner so that you would know. And that's what's missing, for the most part.
The consequence of this, in your view, would be a grant of the petition or a remand?
A remand, Your Honor, I would think. If I could just have a half minute. There's one other, I tried to point out in the briefs, I won't repeat the things that whether the immigration judge relied on it or not didn't make sense or didn't add up, or there were indications, sore thumbs, shall we say, that indicate whether or not someone is making something up or exaggerating something or telling the truth, that every trial judge looks for in hearing a witness. And the one thing that the judge did articulate was that this abortion certificate, and the country report, it carefully always points out that in these documents coming out of Fujian in southern China, there's a tremendous amount, they're very questionable. and their investigations at the consular level have confirmed that problem, and there is no abortion certificate. And it's funny that the consulates on the ground, on the scene, can't find them, and yet we see them time after time in asylum claims before this court. The only certificate the consulate is aware of is one that is more or less perhaps like the one in this record and in other records, which is given when the abortion is voluntary so that the woman can demand 2 weeks of leave. There is no known certificate for an involuntary abortion.
Okay.
Thank you.
You have a little over a minute.
This looks like that we may have a settlement. And I wouldn't object to the government suggesting that the court remains this case to the BIA or to the for further development of the record. And but one thing that I would ask the court to address is that the IJ's the IJ in this case is not a fair-minded and a neutral fact-finder. And basically, my belief that at the very beginning of my client's testimony, that he said his girlfriend was forced to have a mid-term abortion, the IJ just jumped at him and said, sir, it's very hard for me to believe your story. I think the hospital attitude exhibited by the IJ, that might have something to do with my client petitioner's confusion, and because he was disconcerted about the IJ's attitude toward him.
And did their client to request that relief?
No, Your Honor. But this is a constitutional...
This is something that just occurred to you now?
And obviously, in my belief, Your Honor, and but it's a constitutional issue, and the petitioner can raise a constitutional issue for the first time with this court, and the BIA lacks jurisdiction to review a constitutional issue.
We understand that. You're out of time. Thank both counsel for the evidence that just started to be submitted for this.